All right, cool.
And a sip of water.
Pack your knives and stay. This is the return of the Top Chef Judges Table podcast here at Rob Has a Website and Reality Wrap Ups. I am Antonio Mazzaro. Happy to be back this week talking season 13, episode 12, Top Chef, Walk This Way. I'm joined by three guys who I know can handle their own walks. Josh Wigler, Mike Bloom, Kurt Clark. Josh, how are you?
I'm walking out.
Mike?
I'm walking out of the podcast.
Mike, are you walking in?
I'd say I'm a walk-in restaurant right now.
Oh boy, walk-in. And Kurt, can you do a Christopher walk-in?
I really can't. damn it! I wish I could.
Just watch, let's, little man.
Yeah, I've got a hamburger bun here, and I'm ready to walk and roll.
Oh boy! All right,
walking dead.
Don't let the quality of pun deceive you. This podcast is going to be on point. We're going to cook up everything we've got here in our quick fire and in our elimination challenge. We don't eliminate chefs here on the Top Chef Judges Table podcast, do we, guys?
Typically not.
No, not really.
I think there's probably one chef that Josh and a couple of us would want to eliminate at this point, but unfortunately we don't have the power to.
What are you talking about, bruh?
Mike?
Me? Eliminate me? What?
You?
All right, now I'm firmly in the anti-Jeremy camp now after this week. And maybe it's because he did end up eliminating someone from my team by default. But I don't know, man. The case against this guy just seems to be growing week after week, unlike his hair.
That was rude. You know, the thing is, though, like I've been kind of carrying the torch on the anti-Jeremy thing. But like now that it's become such an obvious thing, I'm sort of leaning into the disaster. And he's become kind of my new Philip, where he's just such a joke. And everything that's coming out of his mouth is so absurd and so ridiculous, and all of his concepts with gastropubs where you're being served by hot chicks and you've got a open bar, rooftop bar upstairs, like come on, man. So it's infuriating, but it's also kind of hilarious if you just let it happen.
I wasn't around last week to talk about how ticked off I was that Karen went home over Jeremy. I thought that was ridiculous, but again, my team, so what are you gonna do?
Yeah, we'll get into all of this because we have, I don't know if it's a stunning elimination or a surprise. There certainly is reason to say that Chef Kwame should have gone home, but we lost Kwame, which is, I think, kind of seen as a minor upset in this competition. Now, we're at the point in the competition where a lot of talented chefs are left, so you're going to see talented chefs go almost every week or pretty much every week. But I think seeing Kwame go was a surprise, and we'll get into that. If this is your first episode of the Top Chef Judges Table podcast, first off, thank you for listening. Second, we are recapping each and every episode of Top Chef this season here at Rob Has a Website at Reality Wrap Ups. If you would like to subscribe to what we're doing, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/RHAPUPS. That will give you the feed for our wrap ups, not only about Top Chef, but about this season of The Bachelor, the happy hour with Jordan Parhar, which I believe will be Big Brother Canada heavy right now. And MTV Realities of the Challenge. So we're covering several shows here. Not us. The four of us, we're just podcasting about Top Chef. We are all in on these chefs. We drafted our teams. Who had Chef Kwame?
I did.
Mike, the top story is Chef Kwame is eliminated. Kwame for president. Very classy guy. Very classy way to go home. But probably some pretty stupid mistakes here. Am I right about thinking that?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's been an emotional roller coaster with Kwame. I remember all the way back to the first podcast we did this season where we called him a ninja. I mean, he was basically invisible the first couple of episodes, but seemed like a solid chef. So I said he wasn't my first pick, but I said, okay, let me pick him just to see what happens. After that, he immediately impressed and he did really well for those few episodes. But if Kwame has proved anything this competition is that he's wildly inconsistent. Even though we had a good week last week, the past few weeks, he made a bunch of mistakes. There was a lot of inconsistencies where he would give a confessional about how his dishes are really working, including this week. And the judges would vehemently disagree, which is, I feel like, in complete opposition, where sometimes chefs will say, admittedly, this isn't my best dish, and the judges will agree. But Kwame seemed to be in a territory where he felt like he was putting forward good food and the judges were not seeing eye to eye with him, which was a little strange for someone that was considered a front runner early on. I mean, I think he's a great character. We found out so many interesting things about his life over the course of the past 12 weeks, but that being said, I can definitely understand, as much as I want to see Jeremy go home over him, I could definitely understand him going home, especially this week. And I'd say overall, I think he impressed for being very, very young in this competition.
True.
Yeah, it's funny because you're right. I think the young in the competition part is the real key, where Philip really seemed to be a little bit out of touch, and maybe he had his ideas and just was not in sync, that his ideas were really not what the judges wanted. I think Kwame, his youth showed. He had some ideas that probably he would have edited out if you had a little bit more experience or he were a little older. And I think we saw this a few times from Chef Kwame. He went for things that probably weren't in keeping with the kind of things he'll be doing 3 or 4 years from now. And I think we did see his age, especially on this episode, where it seemed okay to press off the frozen waffles just because they're his jam. Yeah, there's something he likes, Kurt. You're not a big frozen waffle guy.
No, you knew right from that moment. Anybody who's seen a single season of Top Chef knew that he was screwed right from that decision.
It was over yeah, immediately.
I was like that my groan was, I mean, I am not going to hate on toaster waffles.
Hate on toaster waffles at this point in the competition on Top Chef, though.
Yes.
Yeah, let go your criticism outside of this competition.
nice,
yes. It was like, what were you thinking? That just no.
Oh. Yeah, and especially considering previously in this season, like second week or so, remember Frances used those canned chickpeas and Tom was on her ass about it.
But they're
so
organic.
Clearly, you have to have
it organic on the can.
You have to, and Kwame said it said organic on the frozen waffles container too.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to realize that in Top Chef, it's one of like the cardinal rules of Top Chef probably to not use pre-made, pre-packaged food.
Yeah, I think that unless that's like the name of the challenge, you know, or there's special occasions that allow for it. But if your challenge this week is to come up with your fast casual concept, that's going to be Kwame's going to decide on a chicken and waffles place. And he's not even creating the waffle. You know, the thing that could be the most versatile ingredient on the menu is really wild. And the weirdest thing to me was how I wouldn't even say necessarily defensive he was about it, but just like how much he believed in the frozen waffle. He just believed in that frozen waffle so thoroughly. He kept talking about it like, yeah, it's organic. Yeah, it makes sense. All of this stuff. And it was just mind blowing to me that he not only didn't see the possibility that this was an outside the box weird idea, but that he thought that it was a really good idea. It was just insane. And I agree, Kurt. Anyone who watches enough Top Chef knows in that moment that Kwame better bust out the best dish of the night. Otherwise, he's done. Like it could just be fine. And that will still be enough to go home because he's using frozen waffles at this point in the competition. You just can't do it.
Yeah, especially when it seemed to be a big selling point of his concept that you could have different kinds of waffles. You could have a sweet potato waffle. You could have all these other things. And that was part of the fast cash kind of selling point, was that you could go in and say, I want this kind of waffles and I want this with the thing. And, you know, you weren't able to do that in the limited kind of prep that he put forward. And he put forward the most kind of blasé and boring version of that. And it was just the frozen waffle. Not only that, but they were tiny. They were bite-sized. And I don't think any of the chefs could or the judges could get behind that idea as well. In fact, Richard Blaze, in his blog that he wrote for Bravo TV, said that if Kwame had just made sandwich-sized waffles, he probably would still be in the competition. That's pretty rough. So it's not just the frozen waffles that send him home. It's a total kind of misunderstanding of the concept. And I think that's the difference ultimately where the decision point lies with the judges, is it's this decision that is not just based on the fact that he gave them a frozen waffle. It's that the frozen waffle that he gave them was also representative of a total misconception of what the judges were looking for in the challenge. So that's rough. Again, though, I do chalk a lot of this up to youth. Kwame, very happy with these things. Like he is defending them. Not sure how much of that is him saying, like, I got to stand behind my concept, and how much of it is him truly thinking that frozen waffles are cool, that they're okay to eat, that he's maybe just a little miscalibrated in terms of what people are looking for in a restaurant experience. Even Tom in the Last Chance Kitchen admits, hey, look, when I make my kids breakfast, sometimes it's a frozen waffle. It's no, you know, it's no shame in it. It's just not what they're looking for in that experience. So I do think youth plays a part. Kwame has done this a little bit throughout the competition, cooked a dish that he thinks is great, that is totally misaligned with what the judges think is great, and he usually ends up on the bottom when he does that. So that's difficult for him. We saw it in the beefsteak competition. We've seen it in other kind of parts of the competition where Kwame cooks a dish that he's 100% sure of, and the judges just are not feeling it. So I think with some seasoning and some time, I think he'll get there cuisine-wise. He reminds me a little bit of Dale Taldy, Top Chef All-Stars Dale Taldy, Pork Slope Brooklyn's Dale Taldy. I think I just think that he, if you remember Dale's first season, Dale cooked great food, but he was young, and his youth led him to making some rash decisions. In Dale's case, it was more along the lines of conflict. Dale was constantly fighting with other chefs. Yeah. He was very angry all the time, and by the second time he came back in All-Stars, he was older. He was a lot more well-adjusted. We didn't see that Dale. What we saw was a Dale who was a lot more composed and who made much better food. So I think with some years on him, Kwame could really, really, really be a beast in this competition.
Yeah,
and I mean, I'm all for Kwame for All-Stars,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, we got to be getting close to rounding up a new All-Stars cast. And if that's the case, you got to imagine Kwame could have a spot on there. And he's totally the type of chef that I could see doing really well after having some time away from Top Chef, growing up a little bit, and then coming back with a bit of perspective and having a no frozen waffles rule in his place. I think that he could do okay.
Yeah, it's fascinating because if you'll remember, the first challenge of Top Chef All-Stars was that the chefs had to repurpose or reimagine the dish that sent them home from their season. So that was the very first quick fire. So you can imagine Kwame coming out with chicken and frozen waffles and having to, make do with that. Spike, in fact, on All-Stars has to make do with frozen scallops. And he actually gets a ton of credit for doing some kind of ninja type work because he's really able to hide the frozen scallop and hide the fact that it's frozen. So I'm not sure what Kwame will do if he gets into All-Stars and has to face up with the dish that eliminated him, but it is very reminiscent of some previous Top Chef seasons there. So
I can't wait for Angelina to appear on All-Stars 2 and have to do that challenge and cook nothing.
Ha! Yeah, that would be very exciting. Angelina, beast at prep, Mike. First draft pick, Angelina.
I was so confused about that. Yeah, first of all, because I didn't know whether she picked Angelique or Angelina. Second of all, like, your sister's with Karen. You know, you guys have been preaching solidarity the past some odd weeks. Why not pick her?
I have some thoughts on that. Josh or Kurt, do you guys have any gameplay thoughts on that about Marjorie? We can get into this right now. We can just jump around this episode because we're down to so few chefs. Marjorie had her own little draft to take care of in this episode. She made some gameplay decisions. Anybody have any hot takes about that?
I think my take on it was that she wanted to pick somebody who had absolutely no ideas and who would simply take orders. And I think that's why she chose Angelina.
I absolutely agree. That's 100% why I feel like she took Angelina, because it's funny. The Vince Mancini, who's been writing these hilarious recaps at uprocks.com, he points out that in the speed challenge earlier in the year, Angelina did awful. So Marjorie seemingly is picking her because she's a beast at prep and she's a great sous chef, but she did really poorly in the speed challenge in the mise en place kind of race or the prep race at the beginning of the season. And so it seems interesting that she would pick her for that reason when she's demonstrated an ability to be slower than the other chefs at that. Josh, did you have any thoughts on the choice of Angelina or Marjorie's picks as a whole? I know you love Marjorie.
I love Marjorie, and I think that that's right. I think that she picks Angelina because Angelina's going to kind of just, nod along and go along for the ride. And yeah, maybe she's not the fastest in prep as seen earlier in the competition, but I don't think that what she's being asked to do in Marjorie's concept is particularly complicated. I think it's kind of a point and click sort of situation. I don't think that there's no breaking down shells or anything like that. I feel like this is fairly straightforward. Not to say that making your own pasta is easy. I hear that they have to fly you to Italy for that, as Master of None taught me. But I do think that, it's fairly straightforward stuff for where these guys are and what level they are at in their career. So I totally buy why she took Angelina. I do think, if you're going to try and knock somebody out, if you have somebody in mind that you don't want to stick around anymore, you do think about where to drop the Philip bomb. That's really the only other one that seemed like really, really calculating. And I guess she had it in for Kwame, which is a surprise to me because Kwame had really been on the ropes for the past several weeks anyway. But I guess maybe she just wanted to go for the easy knockout.
Or maybe she was looking to see, like, where would the Philip bomb potentially do the most damage? And I think she figured everybody could likely, that of all the people, if you had to deploy Philip somewhere, where it would do the most damage, her perception was that it was Kwame, just because that they had not gotten along in the past. That's the only other thing I can think of.
Right. And I think there was a little bit of strategy too, though, with the Jeremy Jason pairing as well. I mean, we were talking about Top Chef sausage stew a few weeks ago, and it's clear that Jeremy is by far the broiest of the guys left in the competition, and Jason clearly did not fit in with them. And so I think Marjorie kind of bookending her choices here with Jason and Jeremy and Philip and Kwame is a great way for her to say, like, great, these two guys that might have been the front runners way back in the competition, I'm gunning for you guys now.
Yeah, I definitely think that she sensed that she could do some damage with Jason. I think that's a good observation, Mike. And I think that really, in terms of doing damage, I think that from the chefs that they had to pick from, not all the eliminated chefs returned. It was just those six. I think she could say ultimately, these are the chefs I could do the most damage with. You know, you're not really going to bomb someone's team with Chad. You're not going to blow up someone's team with Wesley or Karen. But you can do some damage with Jason by putting him, as you're right, with the Jeremy combo, with the bro versus no. And you definitely can do some damage with Philip, with Kwame. She had noticed them being oil and water in the kitchen before. She had noticed them fighting, and she thought, this is great. Kwame claims that he handled it. It turns out that it doesn't seem like Philip did any harm in the elimination challenge. Mm. If anything, Philip not pushing back against Kwame may have actually hurt Kwame. If Philip had kind of stepped up, or somebody had stepped up and said, frozen mini waffles, are you sure, bud? Like, maybe.
Yeah, but don't you think that the moment that Philip is like, are you sure about frozen waffles? Kwame's like, all right, so the frozen waffles are a fantastic idea and I'm good. Like, this is great.
Most likely.
Except we don't, Philip suggests a waffle recipe and we don't know what it is, but for all we know, it could have been just the strawberry soup in a waffle iron. So Philip, I think, had the right idea in place, but who knows what his waffles, maybe he would have cooked Philip's waffle and he would have gotten sent home for it anyway.
It was interesting, though. I think we saw every single chef, I think, except maybe Karen, but we definitely saw Jeremy and Carl say, you know, please don't stick me with Philip. Please don't stick me with Philip. But I think we saw from Restaurant Wars that in the lunch session where Philip was basically a sous chef and taking orders, he was good at taking orders. I mean, he was that was the episode where we thought that Philip might come out of this unscathed, because he was actually very good at being a second in command.
Yeah, Philip doesn't. That doesn't seem to be one of his weaknesses. It does seem like there's a little bit of negative kind of energy between Kwame and Philip in that regard, only because Kwame is the one really pushing back against Philip's strawberry dish at the Restaurant Wars Challenge. Kwame is the one pushing back at the prep of it and how complicated it is. And Kwame is the one that's like, yeah, he's right. But Kwame is also the one that's saying it's too sweet. It needs some other notes. And Philip wasn't hearing it. Yeah. So there is already kind of an existing butting heads between the two of them. And to be fair, that's the very butting of heads that Marjorie is kind of underscoring when she makes the pick. So she knows, I think, that they haven't worked together perfectly in the past, that it actually, the fact that they weren't able to work together well did probably lead to an elimination. So maybe, again, we can take a chef out. She's looking for cover. I thought there was great gameplay in her strategy in terms of these picks. I think the chances that she had to create a little bit of chaos, she did that. I think otherwise she didn't really create much chaos with the other picks, but I do think she built in two picks that enabled her to have some cover. There's no, I mean, the fact of the matter is those two picks that have the most gameplay strategy are the two that ended up on the bottom. So whether or not her strategy worked or not, I think the proof is in the pudding in some respects, even though no one made pudding.
I would have loved pudding.
That would have been a great restaurant fast casual concept. Yeah. Just a pudding truck.
The proof's in the pudding.
Would it have been savory pudding as well? Like, or are we just talking all dessert puddings, Josh?
No,
pizza pudding. Yeah,
you pick your pudding and you pick your mix-ins.
Yeah.
Ugh, I don't know. Kurt, were you thinking of like English breakfast pudding?
Yeah.
Oh man, I don't know. Blood pudding? I don't know. It's not something I want fast cash. I don't think I want it like slow. Whatever not cash is, slow form.
Slow fancy.
I don't want slow form, fancy. Slow fance. I don't want slow fance. I don't want fast cash. I don't want any blood pudding. Sorry to anyone who's a big fan of the English breakfast or the Irish breakfast, but no blood pudding for this guy. Yeah. But yeah, this was a great, I mean, I would love to see, personally, I would love to see this elimination challenge every season. I don't see that we're going to get it because it was kind of shoehorned into this Silicon Valley, San Francisco business opportunity kind of pitch where people are ripping off ideas left and right, probably from this episode. But I mean, I don't know about you guys. In anywhere near you guys, I mean, a couple of these concepts are things that I've already seen on the market in the fast casual kind of universe. I know Carl's concept is a concept that's out there. I know Marjorie's concept is a concept that's out there. Unfortunately, I can't get just a giant bucket of gumbo whenever I want it. So maybe there's still room for Isaac's. But I've seen a couple of these concepts in my world already.
They actually have soup box is very similar to that. At least it's not specialized on gumbo, but it's specialized in soup. And I believe they have gumbo sometimes. So I've seen that around.
Yeah. No Pasta Mama, although we'll get into this. We'll get into the fact that Pasta Mama doesn't really, conceptually, it seems like it's Marjorie standing in a window with a pasta machine.
I love that, that they're like, yeah. And then, like, I feel like they were really putting it in a corner of it, being like, yeah, and Marjorie will be the mascot. And if I'm Marjorie, I'm like, I'm a little offended that you like have to cast me in this stereotypical role as like the big Italian mama holding a ladle.
Well, she said I'm not even Italian.
Yeah. But I'm done with it. Sure. I mean, listen, if we're going to have a lot of pasta mamas across the nation and there's just like Marjorie holograms in every window, I'm so in on that.
Yeah, it's at some level, though, isn't it just a dressed up Chef Boyardee? I mean, isn't that where we're headed with an Italian mascot with kind of, I don't know. We'll get into that because that concept, I just didn't understand the judges fawning all over it. But first, we have to talk about the quick fire. The quick fire is what gave Marjorie the right to pick the chefs as they were aligned, because there is no immunity on the line anymore. Or I guess anymore. Hopefully not going forward. We're down to a very small number of chefs. So immunity should not be on the table, in my opinion. That's right. Caused quite the stir in previous seasons when it's been on the table this late in the game. But immunity is off the table for this challenge. It is a chop suey challenge. Does anybody have any fond memories of this, of Martin Yan? Yan Canny Cook?
No, wow. Not particularly. My wife was big on him. My wife saw him on the show and was like, oh, sweet, Martin Yan. I was like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
No, Carl knew who he was. This is somebody, I mean, I've seen him a ton, and this is somebody, it's not, you know, it's not Julia Child level when it comes to TV chefs of my childhood, but this is definitely someone that I've seen on TV a lot. I've always thought he was, his speaking style was very funny. He's very direct. He's very kind of, there's not a lack of clarity in what he's saying. He's very straightforward, and he's got a great cadence. So I think he's still bringing that. He says, you know, basically they're to make, like, it's a wok challenge. He describes top suey means meaning something of like a mixture of bite-sized small stuff, So I think that is what we're looking for here. I don't know. Before that, we get this scene of Jeremy. Jeremy, does he seem like frat dad to you guys at the beginning here, where he's talking about teaching his daughter to win always, no second place?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, in the frat dad movie, this is like the point right before the third act where frat dad's a little down on his luck, and his daughter calls him and gives this really rousing, convincing speech that sallies forth and wins the day. And obviously, this is not frat dad the movie, because Jeremy does not sally forth and win the day here. But yeah, they had to soften him up a little bit here.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure it's softened anything for me. Kurt, what about you?
Soft on soft.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Second place is the first loser. I'm like, that's always fun to hear. But, you know, and technically he's wrong. In Top Chef, second place means you were the last loser.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jeremy.
Also, you walk away with a fair amount of money, I think. Not the first place money, but I think you're doing just fine if you finish second place on Top Chef.
Yeah.
And more than anything, I think that you see that Top Chef really does give you the opportunity to connect and cook for some really important people in the restaurant industry, no matter what place you play. And the longer you stay in the competition, the more you get that opportunity. So I'm not sure the metaphor really extends in this. And I really don't know that that's what we should be teaching our children, but it's not, I'm not here to say that somebody should parent a certain way. His daughter seemed very happy. She seemed very proud of her book reading accomplishments, and I'm very proud of her for that. And if we're doing away with Book It and free pizza at Pizza Hut, then we maybe need challenges like this.
You're taking me back.
Book It fan?
Oh,
you're
I was
a huge Book It fan?
Yeah. I completely forgot about Book It.
Oh my gosh.
It introduced me to the personal pan pizza.
A lifelong relationship.
Is Book It anything like Skip It?
It's a book on a rope, and you just twirl it around your foot, and that's how you play the game.
The best thing of all, there's a library on this ball.
No, it is nothing like that. Is there free pizza at the end of your skip it competition, Josh?
Usually, typically, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that. Okay, I'm all in on skip it too then.
There's pizza at the end of everything for Josh.
I know, that's the end of the day. Yeah,
this is a fair point. At the end of the second place
is first loser online for pizza, so you're the winner.
I had terrible pizza the other night. My pizza that I had the other night, Josh, was so bad. I sent an email complaining to the restaurant, and I got free pizza the next time.
Where did you get the pizza from?
Oh, gosh, I don't want to impugn my local chain, but La Rosa's Pizza in Cincinnati, rough stuff. Yeah, burnt, dry, disgusting pizza, and I still haven't seen the last of it. It's
called La Rosa's?
La Rosa's, yeah, La Rosa's. Right. But it's normally very good. I wouldn't have gotten it if I didn't. Anyway, we digress. We're into pizza town.
It's all right.
I'm
doing some Google image searches. I'll report back in a few minutes.
Fair play. Now, this is, book it, Kurt. I mean, ultimately, if you read books and get free pizza, reading books is great. And reading is fundamental. And I do appreciate that Jeremy's saying you're already smarter than me. You're smarter than I am. Yeah. This is something where, I want to teach my daughter to read books because I didn't do the best in school. I took surf class. He doesn't say that, but I feel like that's the implication. So Jeremy's getting a little bit of that at the beginning. Marjorie also gets a little like I'm the last woman left. I don't want this finale to be a sausage party. I don't either, Marjorie. She talks about her balls being bigger than Isaac's. I think that's great. And we're right into the quick fire here. And the quick fire is basically just in a very short period of time, use a wok to create a chop suey dish. Not the most enticing quick fire when it comes to creating gorgeous food. It's kind of a lump of food on a plate because they're chopping it up and mixing it up in a wok. Any dishes stand out to people, good or bad, from this quick fire?
No, but I am looking at La Rosa's online and now I want pizza.
Oh, well. Mission accomplished.
I am sad for all the celebrity tie-ins they do on Top Chef that they spent all their money on Hammer last week and they couldn't get System of a Down to judge the chop suey competition.
Wake up! Chop a little food on my makeup! Why'd you put the keys up on the table?
You wanted to! The table.
You wanted to! Yeah. Why'd you put the waffle on the mini?
I don't think you trust in Kwame's
whatever
frozen
happened to those
waffle
guys?
Dish.
Did they all just overdose at the same time?
Oh, God. Come on.
I wouldn't be
Angels
surprised.
Angels deserve to die, Josh. Angels deserve to die.
I wouldn't be surprised if Jeremy was a fan of System of a Down.
Yes, unfortunately.
No, definitely not.
Unbelievable.
Go ahead, Kurt.
I did find myself Google. I was trying to figure out what I wanted for dinner last night. And I was looking into Grubhub. I was searching for crispy beef. Because I just, for some reason, Kwame's crispy beef like stood out in my mind as something that sounded tasty. So that did leave some sort of lasting impression on me.
And Jeremy goes with Dungeness crab for like the second time in a few weeks. So I don't know if Dungeness crab is the new scallop for Jeremy, but he definitely has a type.
He's like, I'm just going to keep cooking it until I get it right. Damn it.
Yeah, he likes Dungeness as crab. And it's really difficult for Jeremy, I think, because this is something that he does well. He cooks seafood well. And Mike, you can talk about trying it over and over again until he gets it right. We know Jeremy has had success with seafood in the past in this competition. And I think it's like Isaac. I think that a couple of these chefs are really good in their sort of realm. And the story of their season is them stepping outside that realm or managing to make that realm fit in other areas. And I think that that's the question that we ask ourselves, what the upside of a chef really is. Does Isaac have competition winning upside? And it's tough seeing Isaac winning the competition because while he's James Beard nominated for what he does, the breadth of what he can do, it seems limited. Whereas the breadth of what Kwame could do actually in some instances got him into trouble. Kwame had gone all over the world and tried a whole bunch of different kinds of food. And often he was cooking food that isn't necessarily best suited for the challenge. And we're going to get into that in the Last Chance Kitchen for sure. But Jeremy's actually on the top of this challenge with his crab. His crab tasted really good, and it was very well-liked. Marjorie's also in the top. Her ingredients balance together perfectly. She does end up winning this quickfire. Amar is also at the top for a very well-put-together dish. And that means that the bottom chefs, there's really no room to hide anymore. Carl's at the bottom. He's got poor proportions in his dish. Kwame's crispy beef was actually too oily, and Isaac's chicken was too starchy, which, to be fair, it seemed like he knew during the competition and struggled with his prep. I'm not sure I'm making General Tso's chicken. That seems a little too on the nose for this challenge to me.
Yeah, save that for the fast casual part of the competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, talk about a space that's saturated. We're not going to get into that. That's Peiwei's big adventure on the Panda Express that they're taking there. So Marjorie does win this challenge. It doesn't seem like there was any kind of drama in this. She seemed like the clear-cut winner to me.
Yeah, though I have to give some credit to Amar here, who apparently had never really cooked with the wok before and did not disastrously fail at it, despite it being, you know, like, as Martin Yan said, like 5 to 6 times hotter on contact than a usual oven. So I have to give him some credit there.
Yeah, we had a question tweeted at us, and I'm going to step down for a second here because I want to make sure I know who tweeted it, and I apologize. My app mentions are fucking mess. do you guys remember who tweeted that?
I remember seeing it, but yeah. I don't remember. I don't have that. Scrolled.
I think it might. Was it Jerry Pots and Pans?
It was... I see the response to it. Oh, it was Jeremiah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let me get back here.
with a video.
Yes. So we had a question tweeted at us from Post Show Recap's own Jeremiah Panhorse, the great Jeremiah Panhorse. And Jeremiah sent us a video of Martin Yan just killing it with the wok and said, which one of us could pull this off in the kitchen? Do you guys, we have any favorites for this competition? Anybody have any wok skills they want to talk about?
Someone said I would burn the kitchen down. I hope that was just a reference to the fact that my apartment almost caught on fire a few weeks ago and not my cooking skills that are implied. Though are in you reality, saying that I also would burn the house down?
I was just saying, are you saying that you wouldn't burn the kitchen down?
No. My lovely wife is an expert cook. She would be the queen of this if she was on this podcast. She would be the winner, but I think I am probably fourth place.
Kurt,
I'm reaching the bottom there with you because I could, if next time you see me in person, I can tell you the story about how I slice my thumb open slicing bread. So I do not trust myself with a knife nor a wok in the kitchen.
Oh my gosh, they make sliced bread now, Mike. It's like the greatest thing since.
I didn't even use a bread knife to slice the bread, and I ended up scarring my thumb as a result.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think Mike's in last place.
has your blue apron game given you these wok skills that you need to succeed?
Unfortunately, my the stovetop in my apartment here does not get a flame that is 5 times hotter than a normal stove. I wouldn't be afraid of it. I would give it a shot. I'd throw myself in, and if I burn something down, so be it. But maybe that sort of bravado would put me over the top on this one. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that you'd have a shot. I grew up cooking on a gas stove. I've cooked I've had some kind of disasters. Yeah, I've had some disasters that look a lot like the video that Jeremiah tweeted at us with a lot of flames. Mostly those have come out of the broiler, but I've definitely played around with the wok. I own a wok and I use it on the reg, but I don't know. I feel like you've got the fine dining kind of prep, and you've got the more recently used skills in this realm. So I feel like you'd do pretty well at this, Kurt.
I'll take that. I don't win at life that much, so I'll win at this.
Yeah, dollar bills, y'all. That's what Carl would
Antonio,
say.
Antonio, that makes you first loser in this wok competition.
Oh, boy.
Here's your pizza and book.
I could never be Jeremy's daughter.
Here's your book.
Here's my book. I'm going to put it around my leg, Mike, and I'm going to jump over it and get free pizza.
Perfect.
That's the way it works. Someone told me that. I did say free pizza, Josh. I'm very sorry. We're going to have to look, Josh. You're going to probably podcast for another 40 minutes or so here. You're just going to have to hold out.
I'm hungry.
Josh, is your fast casual dining concept just free pizza?
Yeah, it's called pizza.
Oh, I want to know. We're going to get right into it. So I want to know, Kurt and Mike, if you've got any fast cash ideas that somebody can rip off from listening to this podcast. But yeah, we're going to first. Marjorie does win. She does get to pick. We talked about how she sets up Jeremy with Jason. She sets up Kwame with Philip. She sets up herself with Angelina. She puts Carl and Chad together, which doesn't seem to be a combination likely to produce anything negative. It is, in fact, the winning combination. Spoiler alert. She puts Amar and Karen together. That seems to be like she's done Amar a big favor. And Isaac and Wesley, the two Southern guys, that seems to mix pretty well. Those two guys seem to be on the same page throughout. So Marjorie doesn't really come at Isaac very negatively. I'm not sure her choices. She really does indicate in her kind of talking head that she wants to cause a little damage with her choices. She wants to cause some issues with the way that these chefs are coming together where she can. We talked about how that sort of manifests a little bit in the bottom two or the two that she highlighted. So good on Marjorie. But it is down to each remaining chef testant to come up with their concept. Carl wants to come up with he's cooked Mediterranean food throughout this competition. It's where he started with the carrot soup. He's done really well with it. He thinks there's room for Mediterranean fast casual. I agree, since that's something that I've seen in fast casual before and really liked. So good on Carl for ripping off a great existing idea. Carl wants to what about the name of this restaurant, though? What does he call it?
Savory Med.
I don't know about this. This sounds like something that Jim Rice, Survivor's Jim Rice, would operate and own in Denver, Colorado. I don't know. What do you guys think of Savory Med?
Give me some of that sweet Savory Med.
This is not the best name. And I think the judges also feel like Savory Med maybe is not the best name. Even though it's a very good concept, the name needs some work. But of course, it's no Pasta Mama, which is Marjorie's concept, which does seem very Marjorie-centric, as we talked about. Pasta focus, an extruder in every restaurant. It's great that she's calling herself the extruder. That's awesome. That's a great nickname, I think, to apply to yourself. She wants a pasta machine in every... I don't know. I just think that that's a little bit... I've seen it. There's one in my area, in fact, called Piatta, which is an Italian street food concept. They do make their pasta on site, I believe. They've got the extruders there. They do a very Chipotle-like organization where you can either get the proteins on pasta, you can get the proteins on a salad, or you can get the proteins in like a wrap, like an Italian dough wrap. And then you've got all your Italian ingredients there. So this is a concept that I feel like is already existing, at least where I am. And if it's in Cincinnati, then it's freaking everywhere. So I don't know. This, we have to keep in mind, this was shot about a year ago, I guess. Maybe it wasn't as live then, but this was a concept that I even knew about even then. So I don't know. A lot of these, this is a very concentrated, very heavy market space. It's hard to kind of come up with a new idea in this space. But that said, any thoughts about Pasta Mama that we haven't hit already?
I mean, the judges were frothing at the mouth over just the marketing concept of it. And it's weird thinking about in this challenge how they almost seem to equally balance not only the dish itself, but also the pitch session for the restaurant and the concept, which, again, is something that's not very usual to Top Chef, a cooking competition. So almost like the Instagram challenge, it's an opportunity for chefs to kind of step outside their normal hats and put on a different hat, if you will. But I agree. On paper, I feel like, it's spaghetti that you can customize. Just seems like it's like something I get in gotten my college, food court. It doesn't seem like that much of a nouveau concept. But the judges were so on a roll in terms of the marketing possibilities and the branding that it seemed to put Marjorie in the top for that reason alone.
Yeah, I think one of the other things to keep in mind, though, is like, yeah, we've encountered stuff like this in the past. Like you said, Mike, like you could picture the pasta bar back from college and things like that. But did that pasta bar have like poached tuna and pasta? Like, was that the kind of thing that they were selling? And I think that maybe one of the things that they're excited about, and certainly one of the reasons why I would be excited about Pasta Mama at the hands of Marjorie, is the type of, the types of pasta dishes that you would be getting, which I think are a little more outside the box, that are probably, closer to, really solid, fancy Italian cooking that you probably wouldn't be getting at Sbarro. And I think that there's something to that like her menu and her cuisine and what she's thinking in terms of what she would be putting together. That sounds really exciting. And she executes it really well with the dish that she serves up to these people. It's not just like a pasta bolognese or a penne alla vodka or anything like that. It's a tuna pasta, which can sound off-putting would sound a little off-putting to me. I'm not a big fan of that kind of thing, but it looked really good, and these, the judges were wowed by it. So I think that there's something to that.
Everybody loves tuna casserole, Josh.
Not me.
Well, there you go. Tuna, I mean, it's funny. Tuna and pasta is you're right. It is elevated compared to what you might see from a Sbarro. It is also very rustic. I mean, I think that
that's what I mean.
If you went to places in Italy, just regular homes, I think you'd see it. And I will say in favor of Piatta Italian Street Food in Ohio, they have, you know, there are multiple franchises now, and they do have a little bit elevated kind of pasta cuisine like that. They don't have the I think they have a tuna. I'm not sure. I think it might be seasonal, but they don't, you know, they're not cooking it up, and it doesn't look like Marjorie's. It's not gorgeous like that or anything, but I also don't think they make their pasta in a fryer. So there is that. And I agree that there's a little bit of the elevated part there. I just was not thrilled with the concept. I mean, I think it did rely heavily on the mama part and Marjorie kind of selling it. And, you know, Italian cuisine is so very like a matriarchy kind of, this is my grandmother's sauce, like my nona and all this stuff. Like, you kick it back to like
my cousin Frank from Philly's sauce.
Everybody's got a cousin Frank from Philly, apparently. Yes. Yeah. So there is this sort of familial kind of connection with Italian food that there's certainly, Marjorie's concept certainly takes advantage of with mama right there in the title. So there's something to be said for that. But I don't know. I'm not in love with it. I was, however, really in love with Mars concept. The rotisserie chicken, even though I also think that this is something I've seen before, though not really in a chain. I've seen like bars doing it or gastropubs kind of doing this. I've not seen it in a chain fast cash concept. I love this idea, the rotisserie chicken. He calls it P.O.P.O., which is a name Tom really likes. Shredded chicken, yellow rice, three condiment sauces. I just think this is a really good idea. I would definitely eat at this restaurant a lot.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think that there's lots of hole in the wall places around New York where you could get something like this. But
yep.
But in terms of like a fast casual chain, I'm struggling to think of anything other than sort of a Chipotle type of thing. But it sounds real good. Like, you can, you know, Mike, you just said, yep. Like, if you can imagine those hole in the wall types of places, if you could just like find those everywhere, like if that could be all over America, that would be some good eats for people. It's a really tasty cuisine.
Though I do think that Amar might have had a little bit of a mistake here when he didn't include like some, like as Blaze said, it would have been nice to include like that crispy skin from the rotisserie chicken. Right. You know, I feel like part of the dish is lost a little bit when you vivisect the chicken and then sort of mix up the parts and serve it to the customers on your own. You know, because I feel like people talk about, are you a leg man? Are you a breast man? About chicken and other things. And I feel like if people aren't allowed to make that choice, I feel like you're missing something from that element of a rotisserie chicken.
Yeah, and there was that. You know, he said, I want people to mix it up so they get, you know, a little bit of each meat. But I think that was a clear choice that he made. And I think that that's difficult to kind of decide whether you want to let people pick or whether you want to let everybody have a little bit of each of the good food. So I don't know. I think that that's tough. Kurt, any thoughts on P.O.P.O.? Will this be big in Chicago?
I'm honestly not a huge chicken fan in terms, like, I just think of like bone.
Damn,
yeah, like bone. Well,
that's my line. Good job, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, I like a boneless chicken, but like rotisserie bone-in chicken, it just tends to be kind of at the bottom of the list of things I look for. So, you know, if they're going to, like, you know, hack the chicken off the bone and mix it up and put it on a plate for me, then I'll eat it. But yeah, having to, like, yeah, it's, yeah, just not my jam.
Yeah, I mean, it's more, I hopefully it's more your jam than like a Fazoli's fast casual Italian is. Hopefully you'd be more likely to go to P.O.P.O. than a Fazoli's, but maybe not.
Well, I think that was kind of the issue I had with Pasta Mama, is when I think of fast casual, I think of lunch, and I think of something that I don't want just sitting in my stomach all day when I'm going back to work. And so that was, I think, the main issue I actually had with Pasta Mama, was that while it sounded good, it didn't sound, I kind of viewed all of these things as things I would go and get for lunch and then go back to work. And I think for that reason, Pasta Mama didn't appeal to me. And I kind of viewed the rotisserie chicken thing as potentially a bit messy. So neither of those really appealed to me.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I don't know. You'll have to let me know or let us know here as we go through the rest of these, which ones stick out as good lunch restaurants. I'm curious. I know you are in Chicago. One of the places I've seen the Mediterranean fast casual concept is in Chicago. There's one called Roti Mediterranean Grill. Have you been there, Kurt?
I haven't, but there's also a Naf Naf Grill, which is also highly Mediterranean. And there's a place near me, which is a little bit more Middle Eastern, but with some Mediterranean flair, called Falafel, which is very much like kind of a Chipotle meets Mediterranean, where you get, you choose your protein, you choose if you want it in a wrap, in a pita or in a bowl. You have a mezza bar where you have like a bunch of condiments that you get to add yourself. So yeah, they're pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, and we're really kind of hammering these chefs. I mean, there's Pollo Tropical throughout the South that is close to what Amar's doing, although it's not strictly Roto. You can get, you know, chicken over rice with different sauces.
Oh, the plantains.
Yeah, you could also get plantains if you're interested in that sort of thing. But really, the most derivative concept, the one that is just the market is blown up, and I don't understand why you would even come to the table in this challenge with this concept. And I almost feel like you should have been sent home, sight unseen, food untasted, for bringing a taco restaurant into the mix. Jeremy wants to make taco dudes, cool tacos. Yeah, octopus, pork belly, tripe. I mean, I feel like this one is doomed from the jump.
Well, on the bright side, Taco Dudes is a slightly better name than Spicy J-Rock 305. So he's on the mend in terms of naming things.
Except when you realize that's the name of the main taco dude.
It's the Spicy J-Rock 305's new venture, new yeah. venture.
Every taco dude, has a Spicy J-Rock in the window making tacos for you.
But you do have to give it to him for naming the taco the bro ham taco.
You do in the sense of what I said earlier in this podcast of like he's the new Philip, where that's just the most outrageously absurd thing I've ever heard.
His menu was hilarious. He had Shaka Bra was another name of
Unreal.
His tacos.
Unreal.
The bottom of his menu had a category called Sauces for Flav, which just had a list of all the condiments he uses. Like he was very clearly steering into the curve with this, but probably a little too much, so much that he spun out.
Yeah, true. Tom seemed to think that you could go social media with all these ideas and these items and that there might actually be something in some of these goofy-ass taco names.
I thought that he meant that in terms of, like, you could go social media with this and make it a teachable moment. Like, don't do this.
I thought he saw the marketing potential, but you're probably right.
It's like
he
when people, like, hijack the taco dude hashtag to be like, no, don't do that.
Yeah. We could do this. We could, like, you know, at midnight has the hashtags, like, do whatever. Like, let's hear, like, your different taco dude tacos. If you want to tweet at us, I'm at AC Mazzaro, 2Z's 1R. Josh is at Round Howard. Mike is at A Mike Bloom Type. And Kurt is at Kurt Clark. Just let us know what your taco dude's taco would be. That, you know, we'll get back into that at the end. But I want to put a pin in that before we forget, because there is a lot of potential in that idea. His business plan is just all over the place. He wants a gastropub. We talk about this rooftop garden. With the word restaurant, anytime the word restaurant comes into play, I think it's a bad deal. I really do. What is Broham? Is it Broheim? What is this? What is Broham? I don't understand this. Why is this a funny joke, Kurt?
Well, it's just a term is like, what's up, Broham? Like it's just another way of saying bro. I've heard, never used, honestly. That was the only thing I found amusing about the concept. I mean, I almost got a little bit of a sense like he had thought about the menu, but he really hadn't thought about the concept. I almost got the sense that he was kind of riffing or improvising about the gastropub, the hot waitresses, the beer garden. That was just kind of like off the cuff, and I thought we almost had like a Philip. I'm not gonna get judged on that, right? Sort of moment here, because I don't think he seriously was thinking that would be part of the concept. And by the time it left his mouth, he was a little bit screwed.
Well, he joked about it too. He's like, yeah, I had a little bit of too much to smoke this morning before work, which, by the way, I don't want to ever hear Tom Colicchio say the word doobie again in my life.
Yes, exactly.
Really, really weird hearing him say doobie.
Yes.
Yeah, he made marijuana very uncool with just like one word. It was very difficult. Talk about frat dad. Like, it doobie, was like, oh, doobie, doobie, huh? What is this, 1964? This is difficult. So, I don't know. Yeah, that was it was a mess. It was a train wreck from jump. And I think part of the problem, I really do, is that the concept itself is so played. I think that it's difficult to really come up with an idea that's going to jump out in that marketplace, because this is a marketplace that is so saturated with taco joints already. It's like, oh, another taco joint. Oh, great. You know, like you're not really – Chipotle serves you tacos. If you're trying to be the different Chipotle, you really have to be tight with your concept. And Jeremy was just spitballing and throwing stuff at the wall. everything about it was half-baked, including possibly Jeremy. And so I think that it was very difficult to sell this concept. It's a really saturated market.
Are you saying that Taco Dude was a Taco Don't?
Yeah. Or Taco Dud.
Taco Dud, for sure. Yeah.
Do you think Jeremy could have benefited from calling his taco joint Bro Chacho?
Bro Taco.
It couldn't have hurt. Let's put it that way.
The Dude's family would have loved it.
Yes. Bro Fessor, the Bro Sidon. We have all these opportunities. But the funny thing is that they were also disappointed that he didn't even make fish tacos, that if he's going to go surfer, brah, we just rolled off the beach and we're going to cook some cool tacos and none of them are fish tacos. And that's not what he's bringing to the table. I feel like that was also just a missed opportunity. I really don't understand how Jeremy didn't go home in this challenge, but he didn't go home because Kwame made mini chicken and waffles with frozen waffles.
Yeah.
And he was tweezifying each of his plates. I will tell you, fast casual and tweezers do not go together.
That doesn't seem like the fastest way to put food together is with tweezers.
No, and it's certainly not casual either. It's very twee. It's very organized. It's very specific. He's tweezing up his food. I think that it's already doomed as a fast casual concept when he's putting it in such small bites and plating it with tweezers. It's not great. What about the name Waffle Me? Are you guys okay with that? Or is that even just an awful name?
Sounds like something you hear in the red light district.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. Half bloom.
Yeah. Waffle me is just kind of like, you know, it's it's sort of representative of his entire effort in this challenge, where it's just like he shrugged his shoulders. He's like, well, sixth place sounds good. You know, this is about time for me to check out of Top Chef.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's sad. It's tough. The other thing that we have to talk about is this is like the third time that these chefs have been asked to put together a restaurant concept. They had to do it early in the season when we had 16 chefs left with a Korean restaurant, a vegan restaurant, a Mexican restaurant, and so on. They had to do it at Restaurant Wars, and they had to do lunch and dinner service there. And now they're being asked to, again, develop a restaurant concept. So it's like this is the third restaurant concept that we've seen in this season for these chefs. And I think it's just getting a little played out. I think they've used a lot of ideas. They've spitballed on menus a bunch. They're doing it individually, so there is something to be said for that. But I don't know. This really feels like I'm going to go sports on you guys for a minute here. But when my Cincinnati Bengals Cincinnati Bengals were trying to hire a head coach a long time ago, they brought in two guys. Okay, and this I'll make it relatable. They brought in two guys, and they said to the first guy, they said, "What are your ideas for turning the franchise around?" And he gave them this huge 3-hour presentation, a big binder full of ideas. And they're like, "Okay, can we take that binder? Thank you." And then they hired the second guy, and they're like, "Here's the first guy's ideas." And I do really feel like this is what they're doing. It's like, okay, let's just get as many ideas out of these chefs while we still have them indentured to Top Chef as we possibly can, and we'll put them in front of as many influential rich people in the industry as we can. I mean, we see so many jokes throughout the season. I'm stealing this dish. I'm putting it on my menu. I'm calling my people. I'm wondering how idle some of these threats really are, and if Top Chef isn't also about just ripping ideas off at this point.
Yeah, I can't wait for the Fat Jew inspired challenge.
Oh my God.
Isn't his name the Fat Jewish, by the way, Mike?
No, I think it is the Fat Jew. I think maybe his handle is Fat Jewish.
Yeah. Okay, all right. I want to make sure everyone knows that you're talking about an Instagram ripoff comic and not something else.
No, not Bruce Valanche.
And I'm only half, so it can't fully be me.
And I'm none, so it can. I only represent part of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like it's. I feel like this is interesting that we're seeing now a third restaurant challenge on Top Chef. Are you guys with me that this is a challenge you'd like to see season to season?
I mean, I would, but like you said, I feel like we're at an oversaturation in terms of innovation this season, and I'd rather have this happen. You know, it's like in Top Chef season 4 when they did Restaurant Wars and Wedding Wars. You know, we don't need to see that type of competition happen twice. I would love to see it happen every season because I think it's a great opportunity for chefs to really imagine their concept of a restaurant. Yeah. At the same time, I don't want it to happen for the third time in a season, come up with a restaurant and a menu.
Yeah, I'm with Mike on that. And I think also, you know, Padma was kind of billing it as like this really, really astonishingly difficult challenge that you're going to need a partner for. And I didn't think that this was much harder than some of the other ones that we've seen.
They made one dish.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked the concept of like having to create an entire restaurant concept and right. then one dish that exemplifies it. But yeah, they had to make what was like 100 and 150 of that dish. Maybe the time crunch was such that we didn't really get to see how quickly things had to be turned around on day two when they were actually preparing the dishes at the location.
Right.
Maybe that's where some of it came into play, but they made a dish.
Yeah.
150, but they made a dish.
Exactly. And I think the other thing too, is if this was to be, if we were going to see this particular challenge instituted in future seasons, I would like it to be a little more personal. It felt impersonal in a lot of ways where I didn't feel like I was getting a ton of story from people. Like, what's the story behind these ideas? What's the story behind these fast casual concepts as these people are bringing up? It just kind of felt like people just throwing shit at the wall. And maybe that's because that's what was happening in a lot of these cases.
Oh, you stole my fast casual concept.
What would the name of that restaurant be, Mike?
I don't even know.
Who flung poo? I don't know. It's an Asian one.
Shitty walk.
Who flung poo? Is that movie with Patrick Swayze as the drag queen?
No, that's Tu Wong Fu. Thanks for everything, Julie Newmar. Kurt says shitty walk. That's pretty funny. Yeah, I don't know.
It was me, but I'll give it to Kurt.
Oh, sorry. That was Josh. Yeah, shitty walk.
Good job, Mike.
And then Amar could take it and make shitty chicken. We have a whole spinoff here where we could do, or Kwame. Kwame could do shitty chicken as well. He apparently was.
Shitty chicken so and waffles. This is difficult. Yeah.
So, I mean, it is difficult. You're right. The market is saturated. We do see these restaurant concepts kind of churn through. They do only have to cook one dish. I think that helps certain chefs. Isaac, for example, who wants to make the gumbo restaurant. He's right. You know, I really liked his talking head where he's like, think about the city you're in right now. Now, tell me where you can go get fresh gumbo. And he holds his hand to his ear. I think if you're in a major metropolitan area, you might have somewhere like that. I think your smaller areas, it's a little more difficult. There is a great little Cajun chain. They only have two or three locations here in Cincinnati that I'm a huge fan of, called J Gumbo's. So it's there. And that's a fast casual restaurant for sure. But I'm a fan because I think the food is delicious and there really is nowhere else like that. So I think he's onto something with gumbo, y'all. Richard Blaze seemed to really like the idea that you could take large, you know, just I'm going to order a gallon of soup for my family and carry it out and just do that. So that went well. But I think more he was better served by the fact that the dish that he prepped as his sort of sample dish tasted really good. And it wasn't any kind of fancy gumbo. It wasn't like he was proving that, you know, you could do, and this is where Carl really won his marks, I think. His menu really wasn't proving that you could mix and match as you please, like you can in most fast casual concepts. But Isaac's food was really good in the bite that they had. And I think ultimately, he doesn't end up in the top, but he also doesn't end up in the bottom because his concept was decent and the bite that he made them was very good. And I think that other chefs are hurt by that. I think other chefs are hurt. Jeremy, for example, just doesn't make a good taco. So never mind the fact that his concept was terrible. His taco was not that good. And I think that's difficult.
Yeah.
You pretty much nailed it. I was like saying, yeah, that's 100% correct.
Yeah. It was a taco dud. It was terrible. It was just, you know, it was not good. And it's kind of indicative of where Jeremy has been for the past couple of weeks where, you know, he came out as sort of this front runner for a while. I think in the first half of the competition, Jeremy seemed to really be the dangerous guy to watch. He just has that Top Chef winner look about him. And it's kind of been falling apart. And it's not like there isn't enough time to right the ship and, you know, get back into it and be a little bit more of the Jeremy that we saw earlier this season. But he really has just gone full frat dad, and it's an ugly look.
Yeah, we talked about Kwame possibly having Gregory upside. Maybe Jeremy might as well, because it didn't work out so well for Kwame. But yeah, he's trending downwards, and he has been the past few weeks as well. He finished in the bottom every week the past 3 weeks, which isn't good at all. So hopefully he has a better, he's able to, you know, wake himself up, even though he said at the beginning of the episode that his previous trip to elimination was a little bit of a wake-up call. Apparently he was not completely woken up, and hopefully he is now to be able to make good food. He just seems very hot and cold. He was high in the not he was in the top, I should say, during the quickfire challenge. Whether he was high or not is indeterminate, but he was at the bottom again during this challenge. So it seems like he's very much in the same boat as Kwame in terms of they were both front runners and they're both extremely volatile in terms of challenge performance.
Yeah, and I don't think the show is hiding that at all. Like, for example, we see Tom come into the kitchen with the guest judge and Adam Fleischman, and I think that it's very clear. The only two people that we see Tom really interact with are Jeremy and Kwame. At this point in the show, it's really hard for the show not to telegraph things, I think. They try to introduce a little bit of drama with will Marjorie be able to boil her pasta. That ends up not being a problem at all. It's not Chekhov's pasta fryer. It's a little bit of Chekhov's frozen waffles in that that's the problem they introduce right away. Those are the reactions we see. But like I said, when it comes to the kitchen and Tom and Adam Fleischman are there visiting, the only two chefs we really see him with are Jeremy and Kwame. And I think that that's ultimately very clear that those are the two concepts that are really going to struggle. Those are the concepts that struggle, like we've talked about. The Philip bomb that is talked about at the beginning of the episode, not an issue at all. Philip doesn't cause any problems at all. Kwame's defending Philip. I do think there's something interesting that happens during the kind of prep segment. And I think it's worth noting because you guys are talking about Jeremy and how he's been on the bottom a lot. And I think that's true. But I think that one of the issues is we don't really I don't recall. Maybe you guys do. I don't recall seeing other chefs really talking trash about Jeremy.
Amar did.
What did he say?
A couple times.
Remember, it was actually the quickfire that he won where he said, Jeremy, all Jeremy does. In a similar way that Marjorie kind of threw shade at Isaac earlier on in this episode, he just said, Jeremy just cooks a lot of raw fish. And that's Jeremy's thing. And it's becoming a little trite. Granted, again, Jeremy won that challenge, but it is an example of people throwing shade at Jeremy, albeit it was like 5 weeks ago at this point.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking more along the lines of if we look at like things that are coming up that maybe can kind of speak to things that might happen in future episodes. Marjorie keeps hammering Isaac. This is the second time she's thrown shade at him for not cooking outside his comfort zone. She did it in Restaurant Wars saying he didn't really have the breadth of experience. She did it here in this episode saying he needs to get outside his comfort zone and stop cooking gumbo. I do wonder when we talk about Chekhov's this and Chekhov's that, are we kind of seeing Top Chef just gradually introduce these ideas, which will ultimately be Isaac's undoing throughout the competition? Are we going to see Isaac go home for not for either trying to extend beyond his comfort zone and failing, or maybe he makes it to the final and his food is just too much in his comfort zone? That's a story we've seen in finales many times. Gregory did it last year where Gregory tried to cook well beyond what was expected and he went home. And instead of cooking just straightforward what he's really good at, he really tried to expand his horizons and didn't end up cooking the best meal of his life as a result. So I'm wondering if you guys feel like we're getting any sense of that from Isaac. Do you feel like the show's setting that up in any way?
I don't, he just seems for me, Isaac, it's just seems solidly middle of the pack. I don't necessarily know he'll be cooking at the end, but I think he'll be there like right up to the end.
Yeah, that's been kind of the question with Isaac. Can he elevate? Can he get to that place where as you're getting deeper and deeper into the competition, he can change it up enough that he is going to be competitive in that final round if he makes it that far? Certainly hope so. He's phenomenal television and has been all the way through. And I think he's been cooking really well, but he has been cooking Cajun. He's either been cooking Cajun or big slabs of meat because he's a Viking. If he can keep up his Viking quest, that might be good. But we'll kind of just have to see. I hope so. I have high hopes for Isaac.
Yeah, and next week is looking real interesting because it seems like Elimination Challenge is, fancy French cooking. And so we'll see how Isaac deals with that. French is definitely a part of Cajun, but probably not the part that's proper for a fancy restaurant.
Well, if he does fancy kind of New Orleans cuisine, like if he takes inspiration from a place like Cushan, which is a phenomenal restaurant in New Orleans, if he starts cooking in that regard, or if he takes, inspiration from, some of the classic French restaurants down there, I actually think that he could really crush that. That would be kind of a make or break moment. I don't think there's much middle of the road for Isaac there, but he could surprise us in that competition, I think.
Yeah, I think that, we're coming down to a point in a competition where there's just nowhere to hide. I think you could do, look what happened with Karen, right? She went a little bit, she cooked a little, she took a challenge that was asking her to do something outside of what her comfort zone was, and she made the dish fit into her comfort zone in a kind of a ham-fisted way. And I think that ultimately that was a bro ham fisted way. I think that ultimately that was her undoing. And I don't know that it would have been earlier in the season, but I think this late in the season, something like that can absolutely get you sent home. And I think it is probably coming pretty close to time for Isaac to be either exposed that way or find a way for him to tweak it just slightly and continue to succeed. And you guys, you're right, Josh. There are a lot of really high quality, high class restaurants in New Orleans. I'm not saying that Toops Meadery isn't one of them. The things that they do, they clearly do very well. He's James Beard nominated. But that doesn't mean that he can necessarily do pull off, for example, what Amar pulled off a couple weeks ago with the French, the La Belle Epoque kind of cuisine. So it'll be fascinating to see how that plays out. I don't know. Carl seems to be a person that is also cooking in his comfort zone really well, but he seems to be able to do even better at sort of sliding around within different kinds of cuisines and not sticking out very negatively. They love his concept in this. We talked about that. He made a lamb stew with couscous. I think if Isaac makes a stew, everybody's saying all Isaac ever does is stewed meats. But when Carl makes a stew, it goes over well. Tom says it'll make the daily lunch rotation. There's fresh herbs on the dish. They really, I mean, that would be hard to pull off, but they really like Carl. Carl's in the top two with Marjorie. Ultimately, Carl does win. And I think that that's great.
Yeah, it's weird. We actually got a question from Stephen K on Twitter as to whether Carl is a Mike Bloom type. And I'm a little confused by that personally. I don't know if you guys see it. I guess because he's like a little bit of a goober and he has a weird propensity for rapping randomly. I guess that makes him a Mike Bloom type, but I'm still not entirely sure what that means.
I thought we determined solidly that Carl was the Kirk Clark type.
Right. Yeah. I think we did determine that. Carl's growing on me though. You know, like I think that, you know, he was absurd with his Dr. Funky Fresh or whatever. And you know, that was endearing. It was his personality. It wasn't, you know, like the biggest personality in the room, but he was having an authentic moment. And now we have him winning an elimination here. Everybody's won one. So you gotta, you at least gotta respect his chops a little bit. At least I do. You know, I've been hard on him, but you know, he's here for a reason and he did well this week. So if he can keep it up, good on him.
And we're talking about consistency in terms of Kwame and Jeremy have just been very up and down throughout the competition. Right. I feel like both Amar and Carl have been very steady throughout the entirety. And this is, again, Carl has never finished in the bottom. Amar's been in the bottom only once. These are two guys that around Restaurant Wars, we were saying like, yeah, I don't think they'll win, but they'll do just fine. They seem to be doing pretty well. And they're both of them, you know, Amar won last week, Carl won this week. We actually might be seeing a little bit of a resume for the end for both of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I look who's left in the competition. Everybody that's left in the competition has won a challenge, right? As you guys are saying, so there's a resume for everybody, and I think that that's awesome. I think that this is a great season of Top Chef because I really do feel like even though I think the favorite in the clubhouse would be Marjorie, I do think that there are others that are conceivable winners at this point, and Carl's one of them. Even though he is a Kirk Clark type, and even though you know the Uproxx jokes about him are who him, you know, just question marks on his face, like he's really kind of bland and really not standing out. I do think he's bubbling up a little bit to the surface, and I agree with you, Josh. He's growing on me a little bit. He's growing on me just in his kind of earnestness, his silliness.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's been one of the most enthusiastic players from the very beginning, like in terms of just being excited to be there, which is one of the reasons I kind of was interested in seeing how he was going to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's just the type of person that I typically don't take too seriously on Top Chef because I don't expect them to last long. And yet here he is, final five, and he's lasted this long and you have to take him seriously at this point. And now that I've been paying more attention to him, I do think that there is this earnestness, as Antonio says. I think that there is this, and as you say, Kurt, I think that there is this excitedness to him. I wouldn't go as far as to call it infectious necessarily, but it's definitely endearing. And I do appreciate seeing that kind of positivity from somebody on this show. And you know, if he's able to just kick some butt in the next few weeks, I'm gonna have a hard time being upset with him winning.
It's just easy to contrast that to a chef like Jason, for example, who during the competition, at least not the Last Chance Kitchen portion, but during the competition just seemed to hate it the entire time.
Yep.
And seemed to be full of dread about the food they were cooking, seemed to be all over the place emotionally. Carl has been very even keeled, very happy, very earnest, very eager, all these things. I mean, he's the one making the joke about, oh, in Korea, they just call it food. You know, he's just from the jump been kind of silly and fun. And I think that that's a good thing to be in this. If he seems to be comfortable in his own skin. And I honestly, that's a pretty high compliment on a show like this, which is so high stress and which does encourage chefs really at every turn to question themselves and to put themselves into difficult positions. Carl has just always taken everything with a grain of salt and done really well kind of rolling with the punches. And so I think that it's great. I really think that it's he has never really struck me until we've gotten down to five now as a real threat to win and take it all, because he's really not ever – he's never been on the bottom, though. And I think that's what has been underscored to us, that the people that have tweeted at us about Carl have really underscored that, you know, he's never really been on the bottom. So we have to think about that. But, yeah, this is a great week for Carl. By any measure, this is a great week for Carl. I think probably the best concept in terms of soup to nuts, like everything about it, from the menu, the way it mixes up, the market space it occupies. I just really think this was the best one. I think Pasta Mama is good, but I just that there just didn't seem to be enough heft to it beyond like what Marjorie was doing. You know, I agree with what you're saying, Josh, but I just I think Carl really was the deserved winner here. Did anybody feel like we have a different take, like that someone else should have won this contest?
The only other person I'd throw in there is probably Amar. You know, I think Amar's was really good, but I think that Carl absolutely earned it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a perfect combination. I mean, they even said, you know, he basically did a Chipotle for Mediterranean flavors, and they called it, you know, idiot proof in terms of every single combo of ingredients pretty much works. And that's very convoluted to pull off. So I think Carl wins on dish, on concept, and on menu execution as well. So he really checks all the boxes this competition.
Except maybe name. Savory Med.
Savory Med. Yeah, work on that. Let's work on that.
That could have been his rap name from last week.
Well, I think Dr. Funky Fresh is a savory med.
That's true. Yeah, there's some med in there for sure. He prescribes savory meds.
Yes. Yes.
So, I mean, that is, there's definitely a room for improvement there. But I think that we all seem to agree that Carl is probably the deserved winner. I do think, obviously, there's a great debate, and we got into it a little bit already, about who should have gone home. I think that both Kwame and Jeremy were really pretty poor in this challenge, that Kwame's frozen waffles were a really bad idea, and the food's plating was just not a marketable thing. But that Jeremy was so all over the map and cooked bad food besides.
Yep.
I'm really surprised Jeremy didn't go home here.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that Kwame at least should have gotten some points in terms of, again, if we're checking off the boxes here of, you know, name aside, dish, concept, and menu execution. I feel like at least Kwame gets a check mark for concept. If not, you know, granted they were hors d'oeuvre sized waffles, which was not a good idea, but the judges seem very excited about the chicken and waffles concept, whereas they almost roll their eyes at yet another taco joint from Jeremy and joints. Take that in more ways than one if you want to.
Better than doobies, actually, Mike.
That actually would have been a great name for Jeremy's
taco joint.
That
would, that's funny.
Yeah.
But I feel like Jeremy just failed to meet any criteria for this challenge, whereas, yes, Kwame did use frozen waffles, and that is, again, kind of a cardinal sin of Top Chef, but he at least got an interesting concept out of the judges.
True. And honestly, I'm going to take issue with the criticism that the waffles were bite size and appetizer size. Again, if you're looking at this for a lunch thing, if you're looking at the possibility of getting, like, I'll have two of these and one of these, I actually liked the idea of several smaller waffles rather than like a huge freaking waffle for lunch. I actually thought it was a good idea. And that's, I think, the main issue where I'll take up the judges. But come on, the moment we saw him choosing frozen waffles, we all knew that he was screwed. I wasn't there to taste Jeremy's tacos, but I'm sorry, you frozen waffle got to go. I'm not going to argue here.
It's indefensible, man. Like and I'm saying this as somebody who and Jeremy is on our team, right, Antonio? Like, we lose points if we lose Jeremy. But I would rather lose a Jeremy over Kwame every day of the week. But that being said, Kwame took frozen waffles, man. And at this point, you can't do that. You probably can't do that at any point in Top Chef, but you cannot do that here with six stages to go when your concept is versatile chicken and waffles, where you're talking about sweet potato waffles further down the line. Maybe you're going to do some sweet red velvet waffles. I don't know. You're going to do something crazy. You're going to do some funky waffles, and you can't do that with just like a frozen wheat waffle, Eggo mini that's organic. Like, you just can't do that. And I think on top of it, the fact that Kwame doesn't seem to recognize that there's anything weird or wrong about it, and in fact thinks that it's a pretty cool idea, really, you know, it says to me that this is a guy who's just, his head is not in it anymore. So I think that at that point, as much as I love Kwame, his story has been fascinating, his journey has been amazing, his exit, Antonio and I were texting a little bit, Antonio said it's like a picture of class the way that he leaves this game, and I totally agree. And just the final moment that he has with Tom, saying like, I started by, you know, working for you. I was a waiter in your place, and now I'm cooking food for you. It's just such an amazing end to his journey. But the journey has to end when this is where he's at. Like, there's no way of saving him, even in the face of Jeremy's bad food. He brought frozen, you know, he brought frozen waffles to a gunfight. You can't do that.
he kind of showed off the bottom of his menu, not the top of his menu.
Yeah.
He didn't showcase the possibility of the concept. He kind of showcased what the concept would potentially settle to after a couple of years.
Right. Yeah, exactly. He'd be like, this is what my menu will look like at like 7 o'clock on a Tuesday.
Right. Exactly.
When we're like scraping the back of the freezer. It's interesting though, because I feel like, again, talking about the edit for Top Chef is wide open, especially this season. But I thought, yes, Kwame was eliminated, but I thought he was getting the big edit for the Top Chef returnee, a la Doug from last season. So I was even more surprised to get into Last Chance Kitchen and find him in arguably an upset, completely taken out of the competition by Jason.
And I think
we had that tweet from Dave Backer, and Dave wanted to know if we thought this was an upset or not. It sounds to me like, Mike, you very much think that it was.
I mean, I think on paper it was. I think now, like, having seen Last Chance Kitchen, I'm really thinking about it. Looking at the two dishes, I think Jason's was pulled off and at least looked a lot better than Kwame's did. It's interesting that they both ended up going international for their to make, you know, the best breakfast dish you can. But I would personally have preferred Jason's above Kwame. But even just going into that, you would think that Tom, who people might say one of the downsides of Last Chance Kitchen is that Tom is the sole determinant, and then Tom has let his biases show in the past in a myriad of ways. And you would think that Tom would look at the two of them and 9 times out of 10 would say, Kwame, I like you more, you move forward. But in this case, he said, nope, Jason made the better dish. Jason, you move forward.
Yeah, and you know, I think we definitely got to see now some definite confirmation on the timing of Last Chance Kitchen between, with given the benefit of Exhibit A of Jason's facial hair, he did not have the beard in the returnee sous chef helping stages of the main elimination challenge. But and Kwame points out, like, he has had to have won, like, you know, 3 or 4 in a row. He's on a streak. He's got momentum. I don't have that coming in. And I think it really was, I don't know, Kwame just seemed a little bit, I don't know if he looked defeated in Last Chance Kitchen in terms of at the beginning. Obviously, he was defeated at the end. But he just didn't seem to have the spark that Jason did. I mean, Jason didn't seem to have the spark in the main competition, but he seems to be getting more and more excited and rambunctious week to week as things are going. And I think that's just helping him.
Yeah, there is something to be said for the Last Chance Kitchen momentum. We're really seeing that play out this season, where Jason is just he's a force, and it's going to take somebody coming in and cooking a really good meal to beat him.
Like, I think a couple weeks ago we talked about, you know, is it possible for 3 more people to enter Last Chance Kitchen and for Jason to actually beat them? And we thought it was a stretch. And I think even some of the names we threw in there didn't include Karen and didn't include Kwame. And like, at this point, I think if we said Jeremy went into Last Chance 3 weeks ago, if we said if Jeremy went into Last Chance Kitchen, who would win, Jeremy or Jason? I think most of us would have at least thought Jeremy. But I think now if Jeremy were to go into Last Chance Kitchen, I'm feeling Jason would win hands down.
Well, think about it this way. We just talked about whether next week with a fine French challenge, if someone like Isaac could crash and burn. And let's assume that he does. I don't want it to happen, but let's say he does. If he crashes and burns, and then the last chance kitchen is, Isaac, you got sent home for doing fine French cuisine. We're going to give you another chance or whatever. And it's like, if I couldn't do it the first time, maybe I can't do it the second time. And so we talked about that a little bit where Jason, like some of these chefs may be facing up with things that are a little bit of a bugaboo for them. And Jason doesn't have that same hang up that maybe, you know, he's got the champion's advantage a little bit in that respect. And so that will be interesting. It'll also be interesting if he gets another actual advantage like he had against Karen, where he cooked second and got to see how the grill played out. So he hasn't just gotten there on the strength of his cuisine. He's also gotten there on the strength of being the winner of Last Chance Kitchen a couple of times and getting advantages from that. So there are built-in things in play there. I agree with you, though. Jeremy could end up there. I mean, Risa Islam tweeted at us, I think, a funny reference to Fabio and his great kind of comment about, you know, the previous seasons where this is a top chef, not a top scallop, about Jamie cooking scallops over and over again. Risa said this is top chef, not top Dungeness crab. And I think you could see Jeremy just getting there. Jeremy, you got sent home because you cooked Dungeness crab for us like four times throughout this competition. So we're asking you to cook it again and cook it in a way that could be impressive that we haven't seen before or whatever. Like you could foresee something like that, or you could foresee, you know, Isaac going out on a challenge that he wasn't good at, like I said. So there are ways that I think you could easily see Jason getting in a position to get one last shot at cooking his way back in, cook against one chef to go back in. That said, it would still be surprising at that point if he wins through. But, you know, I think that anything's possible and anything's on the table for him at this point. So sky's the limit. I mean, he's really done, I think, the major heavy lifting at this point. And now he's just got to kind of get through two of Jeremy, Isaac, Amar, Carl and Marjorie. I guess if Carl or Marjorie were to go home, we'd say, oh my gosh, they have to be the favorites. But any of those other three, I really feel like you could say it's at least even, yeah. If not, maybe Jason with an advantage. So good on Jason for the Last Chance Kitchen. Any thoughts about the specific meals that they prepared? The challenge, just to reset it, was Kwame got sent home for problems with the breakfast food. So the challenge was cook your quickest breakfast. I think they had a very limited amount of time to do the prep. It was 15 minutes. Both of them chose to do egg dishes, but both of them chose to do international flavored egg dishes. Kwame an Indian eggs burgi dish, and Jason with migas, which is like a fried bread and chorizo and egg dish from Spain. The peanut gallery, super active this episode. A little bit annoying, if you ask me.
Giselle's sports commentary?
The morning show with Angelina and Giselle. No, not the best. Not the best. I was hoping for like the weather report from the chopper. We didn't get that. But that was rough. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see exactly where it goes. I think that Tom was blown away by Jason's dish. I think that's fair to say. The minute he tasted it, he was like, this is super. And I think that's tough.
I wish, though, I think they missed the opportunity. I think it would have been much more fun if instead of a breakfast challenge, it was, Kwame, you got sent home for cooking something that was frozen. Here's a bunch of insert sponsor here, frozen meals in the freezer. Pick one and make a meal out of it. I mean, granted, that's very like guys grocery games-esque in terms of a challenge, but I think that could have been a really fun way to diversify things. Because as you said, Antonio, because it's breakfast, they said, okay, let's use eggs. And so even though they were diverse in terms of the types of meals that they made, it did have a lot of similar ingredients to it. And if you said, okay, cook with frozen food, at least it allows them to be a little more creative, which might have given, you know, Kwame a slight and might have given him the edge over Jason.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah, but Kwame does go home, which is really tough. And like Josh, you mentioned his super classy exit in the speech to Tom, which I think was awesome. One of the best elimination moments in Top Chef history, in my opinion. And just great camera work there, where we just kind of saw this, medium shot of Tom. But we really, I mean, you could see his face really well and Kwame in the foreground. And I just thought that was brilliant.
It was like
his
elimination this great moment where you could see Tom being like, ah, we screwed up. Jeremy, you're out. Stay quiet. Keep the compliments rolling.
I was really surprised we didn't see Padma cry or even Tom tear up a little bit.
They were both. I thought they both were tearing up.
Maybe they were. I didn't.
I'm such a robot. I was getting emotional. Yeah.
Me too. Kwame, though, his elimination at Last Chance Kitchen is great because his dream board is definitely includes Padma whispering to him, Kwame, you are Top Chef, which I think is really funny. Kwame, the Kwame Padma thing was one of the best kind of secret stories of this season. We got it a little bit when we got a little moment where they come up to get their food in the elimination challenge and Padma's like, hello, Kwame. And he's like, hi, Padma. And it's just they're really funny. I'm going to miss that interaction and those Kwame just being totally smitten with Padma because I totally get it. And I would be way worse for the record. And it's just really funny. So sad to see Kwame go. Very hopeful, like we talked about already, that we'll see him in an All-Stars capacity. Anything else about this episode, guys, or anything else about Last Chance Kitchen or anything in general right now where we stand with Top Chef?
Just in life?
Should I give a quick update to the popularity poll that's been running?
Oh, yes, please. Yes, Kurt is the most popular among the four of us, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we're all first losers. So they narrowed it down to 8 after everyone voted on the 17 last week. And in the order that they were shown, again, in the middle of a commercial break during this episode, first place is Isaac, then Karen, Kwame, Marjorie, Carl, Amar, Jeremy, and Chad. And after this week, 4 are going to move on, and then 2. And again, I'm just going to say, I think Isaac's going to run away with this one.
Have you guys been voting?
No. Honestly, no.
Yeah, can't say I have. But I would be voting for Tubes Legit.
Yeah, I've been voting. I voted 80 times for Tubes Legit.
Have you
40
really?
40 times last week. Well, this is the deal. They allow you to vote a max of 40 times, and all you do is you put your information in, and then you just like say how many votes you want to cast for that chef, and you can do up to 40. So last week I did 40 for Isaac. This week I did 40 for Isaac.
Wow, so dedicated.
We get something. We get a bonus, right? If somebody that we drafted wins the fan favorite,
Yeah, that's right. I heard that that Mike Bloom and White Noise over here would buy us dinner.
All right, yeah, we're gonna go to Shitty Walk and I'll get you a nice dinner.
That's my new favorite fast casual flinging poop at the wall restaurant. God. So we're in good shape there.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so this is right. We've got the fan favorite update there. And I don't know. I think Isaac's gonna run. I'm say Chad makes it through to the final 8. Good for Chad.
Yeah.
Good, I don't think he's making it to the top 4 though.
I don't think so. As much as I love Chad, but
who do you guys have the top? Mike, who are you handicapping top 4?
I think I would not be surprised if the top 4 that were at the end of the episode, which is Isaac, Karen, Kwame, and Marjorie, I wouldn't be surprised if they were the top 4. Though maybe I could see Carl or Amar sneaking their way in there.
Yeah, I could see Amar making a run at it, but I think that's probably the conversation.
Anything else about this episode? Anybody?
Good.
Bueller. All right, let's all go off to our favorite fast casual dining concepts after we record here and have a good day. Let us know what you thought of this episode. Anybody have a hashtag for this episode? What do we have? Any thoughts, Mike, Kurt?
I think it has to be Taco Dud.
Yeah, Taco Dud.
Taco Dud.
So the more shade we can throw at Jeremy, the better at this point.
Yeah, I think that we're all on the same page. But if you're not, or if you agree with our pages and you want to, you know, just continue to throw shade at Frat Dad, please tweet at us. I'm at AC Mazzaro. Mike is at a Mike Bloom type. Josh is at Round Howard. And Kurt is at Kurt Clark. And, you know, you can use the hashtag Taco Dud to affix your thoughts on this particular episode. You can also always leave us a comment on our show page at robhasawebsite.com. There'll be a page for this individual episode. We love the comments there. As I said, you can subscribe to our feed. robhasawebsite.com/RHAPUPS will give you all the Top Chef content along with our other reality content like The Challenge and The Bachelor and some of the Big Brother Canada happy hours that are starting here. So once again, thank you very much for listening, and everybody have a good fast casual week until we catch up with the next episode. Take care.